As the day wraps up, she's just getting revved up. Steph Lucas on KID News Radio 106.3 and 92.1.
Welcome back to the Steph Lucas Show. I have an interview with Jeremy Gilbert. He is running for Senate for Mike Crapo's seat. He's joining us now live. Jeremy Gilbert, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing tonight, Steph?
I'm doing pretty great. Pretty great. Smoke's clearing up a little bit. My sinuses are better. So, always good to know.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, I was reading a little bit about you on Ballotpedia. They always do a really good job, but I just want to hear about you and your life in your own words.
Sure. Well, I guess I'll start by saying I'm running for the Republican nominee in the U.S. Senate, just like you said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fairly new to Idaho, or fairly new to politics, but I'm not new to service. I was an infantry officer in the United States Army.
Mm-hmm.
I ran operations at the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, and I've held leadership positions in the private sector. So I've spent my entire life serving and elevating others, and I'm really excited for the opportunity to now do that for the people of Idaho.
Well, thank you for your service. That's much appreciated. You served in the military from 2005 to 2017.
I did, yeah. I kind of hit all the components of the Army. I did some National Guard time while I was in college, and then active duty service with deployment to Afghanistan and a couple in other places in the world, and then went to the reserves after I left active duty.
Wow. Well, thanks so much for that. Let's talk a little bit about your work at the Heritage Foundation.
Sure. Yeah, so I went to the Heritage Foundation after I left the Army. I was brought in to help run the operations of their facility. So I was in charge of everything from their physical security to their print production services, their receptions, their janitorial staff, and then I also helped lead their commercial real estate team building new assets. We were pretty involved in expanding our campus right on Capitol Hill. We were across from the Senate office buildings, and we were really trying to make a great place for our intern housing program to grow to.
Mm-hmm.
Heritage had a fantastic intern housing program that helped support interns from all over the country that otherwise wouldn't be able to come to D.C. and do an internship there just because it was financially, it wasn't financially possible for them. So our mm-hmm. intern housing program provided free or subsidized housing for the students so that they could come and be a part of the conservative movement there in D.C. And it was funded by some great donors, which was fantastic.
Okay. Let's hear about three key platforms for your campaign.
Sure. So, my campaign is really simple. It's about limiting the power of the federal government and returning it to the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I want to champion things like term limits, a balanced federal budget, and reduction of burdensome regulations and laws.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a theme of my campaign going forward. And that's that is what I'm going to choose the champion when I get elected to the Senate. So I guess we'll start with term limits. I know term limits are a hot button issue for a lot of conservatives. They always talk about wanting to do an amendment to the Constitution and institute term limits on Congress. You know, not very many people are willing to put their money where their mouth is, I think, and sacrifice their own political career. And that mm-hmm. might be why it hasn't happened yet. It's kind of weird that politicians in D.C. are responsible for voting on something that would ultimately end their job.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to start by saying that I'm going to self-impose term limits on myself. 2 years stops. If I have the honor of serving as the next senator for the state of Idaho, I will absolutely limit myself to 2 terms so that everybody knows that I am a man of my word when it comes to that.
Okay.
Federal balanced budget. You know, our state has a balanced budget amendment. Many, many states and municipalities across the country have balanced budget amendments. Our federal
right.
government does not.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely weird practice for us to continue to spend money into deficit every single year and push that debt onto future generations. That's horrible. I would love to see the United States of America do an amendment to the Constitution that adds a balanced budget amendment for long term.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot continue to sustainably spend money at the rate we are. And that's going to need to be fixed by legislation for Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And then reduction of overburdensome laws and regulations. You know, the federal government has grown to a huge level. I mean, really, since the 1930s, we've seen our government grow. And it's time for us to put the federal government back in the box. There's laws that are on the books now that don't make sense anymore. There's laws that are definitely impact the everyday person in a way that they never were meant to do so. And then let's not even get started on regulations, because we have more regulations than, you know, any other country in the world, mm-hmm. which is outrageous. And we need to pare those back. I think that a good practice would be to go into agencies in Washington, D.C. and say, hey, we need to remove any regulation that hurts the American people mm-hmm. and stops us from continuing to do business. And the same thing with laws. You know, it takes a law to repeal a law. And I would love to go through our federal code, find every single law that would hurt the American people or mm-hmm. ones that are completely outdated, and get those things stricken from our federal code.
Okay. It's an ambitious plan. Thank you for that.
I know.
Before we get to the differences between you and Mike Crapo, he has lived in Idaho a long time. I'm reading in your bio that you have lived in Idaho since 2018. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why did you move to Idaho? I mean, I know why I'm here. It's for a lot of good reasons, but why did you move to Idaho?
Well, you know, I've gotten out a bunch in Idaho, and I've heard something that I absolutely love from people that have moved here, you know, later in life, is that I'm American by birth and I'm an Idahoan by choice. And that is, I think that encaptures why a lot of people want to come to this state. I moved here because, you know, back a couple of years ago, I visited the state and I absolutely fell in love with it. The importance of individual liberties here, the beautiful landscapes, the wonderful people. It really just, it sucked me in. It took me from, you know, the on the fence. I might want to live here and it'll be a cool place to live, to be, I absolutely love this state and I want to give it my very all. And that's why I chose to move here. And really, as I've lived here longer and longer, I've been drawn more to public service in the state, because I just see a lot of people in my day-to-day interactions that are frustrated with their political representation in Washington, D.C. They want somebody that's a little bit more energized and passionate about the issue and is willing to, you know, to stand on top of the hill and say, I'm willing to mm-hmm. fight and die for this issue on behalf of my constituents.
Okay, so you moved here a few years ago. Did you move here with the intent of becoming a senator?
No, absolutely not. You know, I never thought that I would get into politics. I've always been around the political world, especially when I lived in Washington, D.C., both in the military and when I was working for the Heritage Foundation. I enjoyed being somewhat active in the background, mm-hmm. but I never thought that I would stand in the limelight and take a run at a seat. And living here and being a part of the last couple of years, where our political world has become so contentious, and there's a lot of there's a lot of pinning them against us, and drove me to want to do a little bit more. And I was approached by a few people who said, you know, you would make a great politician. And I was like, you know, that's foolish. I gave them all the reasons why it's a bad idea. And then, you know, we continued to talk about the state and the things that I'm passionate about. And they really encouraged me to look into this a little bit more. So, you know, mm-hmm. I went out in the state and I talked to some people, and there was a lot of people that were really excited about it. I mean, there's a lot of people that had the same mentality that I'm sure I'll hear when I'm out on the campaign trail, which is, if you weren't born here, you don't deserve to represent here. Mm-hmm. But there was more of the positivity around somebody wanting to serve the state than the negativity. And that's giving me hope that I'm making the right decision to serve the people of Idaho.
Okay. Why U.S. Congress? Why not start as state legislator or state senator?
Sure. Yeah. The issues that I'm very passionate about mostly sit at the federal level. I think it might be because I'd lived so many places. You know, I was born in New Jersey. I lived in West Virginia. I was in the Army for a long time and moved all over the place. And so the federal issues are ones that have followed me for my entire life. And that's why I've chosen to focus on that. And really, to be honest, most of the people I talked to said that they're most unhappy with their federal representation. So I was like, you know what, if I'm going to go out there, I'm going to put myself out on a limb and I'm going to try to make an impact and serve my state, I want to do it where people think that the service is needed. So that's really what pushed me towards the Senate versus going towards a local office.
Okay. Well, I've heard a lot of things about Mike Crapo, a lot of discontent. So let's talk about the differences between you and Senator Crapo.
Sure. Well, I guess I can start with the fact that, you know, I'm not a career politician. This would be my mm-hmm. first run. I'm just entering the political world. Unlike my opponent, you know, I haven't yet been corrupted by the political system, and I will never be corrupted by the political system, because that's not what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to come in, I want to serve the people here, and then I want to go back to enjoying the beautiful, wonderful place that is Idaho, my home. Uh-huh. I think that, you know, I'm excited to get into this race. I'm energized, and I'm really looking to bring a fresh perspective to the idea of representing the people of Idaho.
Okay.
I think it's critical that we have that the politicians have the pulse of the people, and that's just not something that that is currently being seen by a lot of our federal representatives
right.
in Washington, in D.C. So.
Right. And I get that Crapo is a career politician. He's been there a long time. I get that. That's one of the main differences. But is there anything specifically that he does or has done that you do not approve of that makes you feel compelled to run against him?
Yeah, I think that, a lot of people I talked to said, in many occasions, Mike Crapo votes the way that they think that their politicians vote. But what they're most frustrated in is that they feel like he's not really connected with the people anymore. He's sort of like, some people call it the P.O. box politician, which is they really live in Washington, D.C., and they never come home unless they want to campaign. I think that's horrible. I'm not interested in being a distant politician. My goal is to meet with people all over the state and not just during election years. I want the dialogue. I want to know what's going on here and how the state wants to be represented in Washington, D.C. And I think that I'm even trying to encourage that now while I'm running for office. I want to push people to go to my website, jgidaho.com, where they can ask questions directly to me, and I'll answer them in email form or hit our social media up. And I get on there every night and I read all the comments, which I've told you're not supposed to do because you'll probably get a lot of troll feedback, but that's okay. I get a lot of good questions and comments on there, and I want to be able to be transparent in my views and how I would address the issues that our country is facing.
Okay. Let's talk about the infrastructure package. How would you have voted for the recent infrastructure package?
So, yeah, I think it's important to note I'm not yet in Washington, D.C., so I haven't read the entire 2,700 infrastructure bill. Yeah, or who has, right? I think that there's a lot of good stuff in there. The federal government's responsibility to upkeep our critical infrastructure is an important task to them, right? There's things that bridge across state lines. The federal government's responsible for that. I am, again, not a fan of deficit spending. So anything that's not doesn't clearly have a funding plan already allocated towards it, I would be against. The great thing about the infrastructure plan is that there was a lot of money that was reallocated from previous COVID bills, which I will not say that I supported the money going to those COVID bills. In most cases, I'd be against the funding that went there. And you can see that by the excess that's left over. $450 billion in this case is going to be rolled over to the new COVID or the new infrastructure package. So obviously a lot of wasteful spending that was allocated originally. So, I think there's a lot of proponents here or a lot of benefits that the infrastructure package that went through. I think if I was in Washington, D.C., what I would have done is sadly made my staff and I go through 2,700 pages of the bill, find all that pork and fluff and pull that stuff out in amendments to the bill, and then recommended that we move forward minus all the trash that got taken out with the bill.
Okay. What do you think about parts of this infrastructure bill? There's a lot to it. I don't have the page in front of me that had everything that's in it. But there's things like that were in the proposal of the bill. I don't know if they're in the final, but I mean, we're talking the Democrats wanted money to start electric car businesses. So what do you think about things like that?
Yeah, I don't really think that that's the place of the federal government to be dealing with that. That's in my mind, that's a private sector responsibility to drive things like electric car sales, electric car businesses, putting that stuff in. I do want to say that, politics is about compromise, and in many cases, I think there were some people that entered the infrastructure bill discussion trying to make sure that things that were important were paid for, and then otherwise they'd be split over into the $3.5 trillion 2022 budget. So this is a delicate balance right now, and I get it because the Democrats control the House, they control the Senate, and they control the presidency, and really through budget reconciliation and push almost all this stuff through. So if you can pull out the stuff that is actually important to the country, and then sometimes you have to give on some things, and push through a good faith bill, I think it's a very honorable thing to try to do. Whether or not that got to that, I say doubtful. Again, I haven't read the whole 2,700 pages of the bill, and I probably won't at this point because it's a done deal.
Right.
But I think going into the larger question here was, why are bills 2,700 pages long? I mean, I recently read an Idaho state bill that was passed into law. It was 4 pages long. It was really easy to read. It was a single subject, and the normal person comprehend that.
All right.
2,700-page bill is not meant to be easily read by the American people.
Right.
And that practice is horrible.
And while we were discussing this bill, you brought up something that I thought was interesting. You said a lot of politics and a lot of infrastructure is about compromise. And I know you're on the other side of the state, so I'm not in your I wouldn't be voting for you. But here's where I'm at right now is I think we're at a point in politics where there is no such thing as compromise. After the way that Democrats treated Donald Trump from 2016 to 2020 and even now, I say Republicans dig their heels in and say no, absolutely not, because their policies are so far off the mark. I don't even want to hear about compromise at this point. So why do you think politics is all about compromise still in this day and age?
Well, when you're in the minority and you really don't have an opportunity to stop things, you really do want to get your funding priorities pushed through. So that being said, I think that if Republicans would not agree to anything, that this would be pushed through on a reconciliation, and then they just don't have a seat at the table. I think it's never a bad thing to be able to sit there and help push policy in a certain direction. If you dig your heels in on this, you might not get a vote at all, which would be really, really unfortunate. What I will say is I definitely agree that we've seen, you know, the gloves come off in the political world and things are being steamrolled through at an unprecedented rate.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of pumped the brakes on it a little bit, but in the beginning of the Biden administration, you just saw executive order after executive order after legislation be pushed through that was 100% partisan on the Democrat side. And I think that is going to it's going to come back on them when the House flips and the Senate flips in 2022. And that's where Republicans will have to make the decision. Are they going to be the nice guys that let the Democrats come back to the table, or are they going to take the cue from Democrats and push things back to the conservative way? My hope is that that's exactly what happens, that things are corrected and pushed back the conservative way.
Mm-hmm.
The American people are not happy with the way things are being run right now, and we're going to see that in the 2022.
So you're
election.
Okay with the infrastructure bill? You have no argument? I mean, of course you would get a lot of that out. I totally see your point there,
sure.
But you're okay with talking about infrastructure, because there's some pushback I've read, the Federalists, Red State, you know, with some opinion pieces saying, look, I don't think our infrastructure is really that horrible. We don't need that much money, but you're for talking about infrastructure.
Yeah, I am for talking about infrastructure. You know, there's a lot of physical infrastructure in the country that does need to be fixed. A lot of it falls on the responsibility of the federal government to take care of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's okay to allocate money that's for the common good of the country to
mm-hmm.
To infrastructure. Do I think that it needs to be $1.2 trillion? No, I do not. Does it need to be the original $2.5 trillion or $2.7 trillion? Absolutely not. Like that, obviously, the original bill was the original proposed bill by the Biden administration was full of so many social programs and political fluff that it was just unbearable. Obviously, it didn't even make it to a discussion point yet, and hopefully it doesn't.
Okay. Well, this is great information. Thanks so much for the interview today. I wish we had more time, but if people want to learn more about you, Ballotpedia did a good job with your background and bio and your questions. What about your website?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything about myself, my stance on issues, our donation platforms, soon to be our swag shop, everything's on our website, jgidaho.com. You can go there, learn about us, ask us any questions you like, and we're looking forward to connecting with more people as the campaign grows.
Okay. Jeremy Gilbert, thanks so much for joining today. I hope we can check again soon sometime and see how your campaign is going.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thank you, sir. Jeremy Gilbert, he's running against Mike Crapo for United States Senate. Thanks for joining on the Steph Lucas Show today. Jeremy Gilbert, hope we can check in again soon. Looks like we are going to have some time for sports and entertainment coming up.